But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
Oh, really? Yeah, I wouldn't be asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "Hey, Cuffrey, you free state bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
So I made my, I think it's 14th comeback and counting for Portlaoise last night, lads. So I was 2 years out of the game, pretty much finished with it. I hadn't played football since the Masters 2 years ago. And the Junior Bees came calling for me last night, Ger. I played the full game. My legs were like jelly after 15 minutes. Should have been taken off. Just wasn't the numbers there probably to get me off the field. But I feel like I've been in a car accident now. I'm so sore. It's absolutely, it's excruciating.
Fair play to Wally. That's great. Good to get out. Lovely evening last night as well.
Beautiful. That's kind of what inspired me to go. I first said, my knee's in a terrible state. It'll be grand. Then I kind of went, geez, a lovely evening. What harm?
Yeah. You get off putting the kids to bed as well, which is important too, you know.
Well, they're in Spain, you see. I was more bored, you see. All these things were adding up. See, Brendan, I'm making you feel like an old man here. I'm still kicking. You know, Jerry's retired. He's way younger than me. I'm the only one keeping this show on the road here.
Do you know what? Well, you've made me think about taking your career right back to when I first met you, actually. If you allow me to cast you back a small bit, 1998, that's some time ago now, Willie. You were kind of like the GA's answer to Britpop, you know, with the hair, your attitude, maybe the talent, I wasn't sure, but... if you remember, we joined up for the international rules. Remember that? The first year it was back.
Yeah.
Myself, yourself, and Jimmy McGuinness were in the squad, and we kind of were similar. And I suppose if you look at WhatsApp groups now, we probably in a WhatsApp group. Myself, yourself, Hum, Big Brian, Johnny McCaff, Rooster Redden, and we played a bit of football and enjoyed the crack, plenty of beers, and maybe it was the other way around, but. I was just thinking back to that second test, Willie. I don't think you played in the first one, but in the second one, the hospital pass that you got. Can you remember this, aye?
Yeah.
Now, it was funny because John McDermott was our captain and he was quite a big guy. He was one of our biggest, but he was like a similar size to most of the Aussies. So he caught this looping ball. And I remember it was just on the Cusick stand. So there's two Aussies coming, smelling blood, coming racing for him to sack him. He turns around and gives you a 10-yard pass. I would say you were about 11 stone at the time, Willie. So two boys were conversion on you, and another Aussie came in and joined in the mix. I would say maybe 45 stone versus 11. And it was an awful scene, Willie. I mean, it gave me no joy at the time to see it. You got taken down. It was something like one of those great whites there playing with a seal there you'd see in one of those wildlife shows. So anyway, the whistle goes for half-time. We go on the Cusick stand, I remember. And at the time, remember the Messer McGuinness was... So you come on, you have the hairs, you're bloodied, you're all ruffled, the hair's all over the place. I would say it was the hair you're most disappointed in. But we look at you across the room and McGuinness looks at me and bursts out laughing. like Willie, this was nearly 2000 like sellout game. I know people might look at it in different ways, but this was a big match, you know, that we were playing in. So you looked at us. I had to skedaddle in the toilets because I could see O'Rourke and Mickey Moore looking as if to say, you know, what's wrong with used to? So I come back out there and I compose myself. So I was scared to look up because at the time it was kind of like being in mass, you know. The halftime talk had started. So I just caught your eye and you more or less put the hand up to me and said, used to can go to... I'll never forget it. Hey, but I hope you didn't get a ball like that last night, Bolly. That's some time ago now.
The what you call it, that ball, that pass I got, you can't mark a hand pass, obviously. So I was left high and dry and I'd just come on.
Yeah.
The week before, there was 27 on the panel and only 25 could tug out. So myself and Jim McGuinness were the two that lost out. And I kind of took that a little bit. Jesus, am I good enough to be here at all or whatever? Yeah. So I ended up going out the Friday night before the second test thinking this was the same. And then O'Rourke calls out the panel the next day and I'm on the panel and I'm half going, oh, for fuck's sake. But this ball, anyways, I fell on the ground on the ball in my chest and the big ape that jumped on my back fell on top of me and it just pushed all the air out of my body. And I was running around like for 10 minutes like a headless chicken just trying to breathe. Like this. And honestly,
when
came in at half time and I looked up and this dickhead and McGuinness are laughing at me. But I never got brought on after that anyways. Yeah. That was my
Aussie Rules career.
That was my Aussie. That was my 10 minutes, yeah, just running around trying to breathe. What a proud moment!
That was you last night, now, Willie. That's you back at it.
Got two good points early in the game, lads, until the legs kind of went on me. Maybe Jesus, the water breaks are sensational for junior football.
Yeah,
he gave us about 2.5, 3 minutes.
Yeah, they'd probably keep them in for junior football going forward.
I think they should.
Yeah.
Everybody was absolutely delighted with this. But yeah, that's it. So junior football 43 this week. So I'm going to do a Mickey Linden on it, Ger. I'm going to go till I'm 50. Anyways, enough about that nonsense. The league, I was thinking, like, this is the league semi-finals, and in a weird way, Ger, the league semi-finals aren't, in a lot of ways, they're not as important as the relegation, because there's no league final, there's no further to go, whereas if you're relegated, you're down. You don't have to worry about that with Carlow, obviously, you have a big game, but there's nothing after it.
Yeah, and again, it's been spoken, you know, by a lot of analysts over the last number of weeks, that the GA have missed the trick by not putting in the league finals to be played. Whatever the Division 1 teams having championship to look forward to and a real go at winning an All-Ireland or winning a provincial championship. Yeah. You know, the Division 2 and certainly 3 and 4 teams, the only chance that they'll get in a generation for silverware is to win a divisional title. And I don't know, maybe is there an opportunity if enough pressure comes on them to try and get these things played? I don't know, we could get them fixed still, but it is disappointing that the league finals aren't being played. From a relegation point of view, I know we've come on to the end.
Just on that, would Carlow take the league final the week before the championship?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Why don't you have that option? Like, isn't that not fair? Like, they think they know what's better for Carlow, and we would be happy to play that league final the week before the championship.
Absolutely, yeah, definitely. And the winners at the other side, I think it's Antrim Waterford and more than the other divisional finals.
They would too.
Of course they would, because it's a national title and it's a realistic goal and a name that each of these teams at this level have in terms of winning the provincial championship or an All-Ireland championship.
That's comparing, Brendan, the Division 4 team to a Division 1 team, because we remember last year Donegal came down to Kerry and they had an outside chance of winning the league. Now, it was a long journey and they were out in the championship the week after, and they sent a weakened team down to Kerry, and maybe this is what Croke Park are thinking. Look, nobody would take that the week before seriously. And I would agree, none of the Division 1 teams that have a chance of winning in All-Ireland would take it seriously the week before the championship. They can't risk going out. But I think 2, 3 and 4, maybe not Mayo, definitely 3 and 4 would take the league final the week before the championship any day, Brendan.
I suppose it's all about making gains, Willie, and this is why we're on about the second-tier championship and how you are progressing as a side. So for a load of teams, it's about progressing up the leagues. And outside of that, there isn't a shot really at a provincial. I know we had the strange scenarios last year of Cavan and Leash, and it's both interesting that they're both struggling now, you know, potentially going down a division again, which is hard to believe after the championship they had. So there is obviously times where there's exceptions to the rules, but I think if you look at any managers coming in, look at Enda McGinley, say, and coming in the Antrim, like, what's his big priority? Is to get Antrim up the divisions, you know, ahead of anything. They want to get competitive again in Ulster, of course, but they want to get up the divisions. So you're right. Why is that debate not had at Croke Park to assess the counties that are in it rather than them making a one-size-fits-all scenario for the end of the league?
Yeah. Do you think there's a scope? Now, I see, I don't want you to talk about this too much because you've a game against Loud and, you know, you'll be accused of saying, you know, I'm looking too far ahead. But, like, I mean, in general, even talk about the Division 3 league semi-finals. Should Offaly, Fermanagh, Derry and Limerick be asked, are you happy to play a week before the championship? And if they say yes, play the league final.
I would fully agree with you. And the Carlow hat off, again, you know, it's a realistic goal. And Brendan mentions McGinley up in Antrim as well. Like he would have said out at the start of the year saying, Antrim, you know, they're not near an Ulster championship, really, let's be honest. But they do have a chance of getting up out of Division 4 and potentially being divisional titles. And that will in itself create a buzz around the county. It'll create, what would you call it, nearly a pathway or a bit of inspiration for the younger guys coming up to say, well, geez, the lads are playing in Division 3 now. These things are going well. And it just raises the standards, it raises the bar. And again, going back to my own time playing with Dublin, where initially I was in with Pillar, and I remember going up to Donegal and playing up in Ballyshannon and the shitty pitch there in Aerua, I think is the ground there, and we were being told that, look, it's only the league, don't be worrying about it. But when Pat came in, he said, in order to beat these teams in championship, you have to beat them in the league, regardless of what personnel they have out, because it's still the same jersey. And the same way, in order for a Division 4 or 3 team to progress along to the latter stages of an All-Ireland series, they need to be playing against the better teams and be exposed to that level of football. And that in itself, it just, again, it raises the bar the whole time.
Yeah, you know? James McCarthy's been in the media. We're going to comment on some of his some of the stuff he's been saying. He agrees. He said, we just had a free weekend gone by. He says, I don't think there's an issue with teams playing week on week. That extra weekend could have been the weekend where you had the semi-finals or whatever. Now, obviously, Dublin are in a situation where they don't have a killer first round. You know, Donegal couldn't take Down for granted, maybe, you know, or Dublin would be fairly sure that they'll win their first round. So, like, I mean, I can understand James being pro it. I would be just interested to see what teams themselves, you know, think and give them the option. I don't want to be repeating myself again, but, you know, Division 2 and 3 or 3 and 4 would definitely be on for, like you're saying, for playing those league finals. James McCarthy, right, he's still winning the long runs in Dublin. Right, I couldn't, but like, he's 31, he's 8 All-Irelands. Yeah. Like, at what point does his competitive nature start to weigh in, right? He's 8 All-Irelands, 4 All-Stars. He's the only player that has won all 8 out in an outfield position, have started at all 8. And he said that the young lads beat him in the shorter runs, but they still can't get him on the longer runs. Isn't that incredible, Ger?
Yeah, he's an old thoroughbred as James, and it'd be interesting for you to do, or one of the researchers, Wally, to find a snap of James in his jersey for the 2011 All-Ireland final and now, and just the size of him. Like, he's put on maybe 5 or 6 kilos of actual muscle and how he's progressed. But James, Mickey Whelan, Brendan, was our coach under Pat Gilroy, another St Vincent's man as well. And he used to be always on to James, you're loping when you're running. But for every 2 strides James was taking, I was taking about 5 strides. But it's just the way he ran. And Owen O'Gara has a similar kind of stride. But the lads are just powering off the ground.
Who's up there with James now in the long distance?
Yeah, so Michael Darren McCauley used to be decent. Very good. Darren Daly, Butsy was very good. Kev McMenamin has a great engine.
Really?
And I actually wasn't too bad on the longer runs.
Could Kenny not be good at them, though?
Kieran was excellent when he came in. His exposure to the Aussie rules, even for that brief time, I think it helped him raise the bar and to know what level he needs to get to. And when he did his knee and his cruciate, I think maybe the league 2014 or maybe 15, I think he put in an awful lot of work to get himself right to never be caught out again. But Kieran is a guy, when you're looking at the 1K time trials, the lads are doing slightly sub 3 minutes or just over 3 minutes. They do that comfortably enough, like, you know. So.
Right. What were you like at the long distance, Brendan? I can't imagine very good. You're more of a sprint man.
Yeah, when you have a Jamaican ass like mine, it just propels you. The Usain Bolt day was good on there. You know, my sisters have it too, which... You know, initially it wasn't a good thing, but now...
The sisters won't be happy with that, Brendan. The sisters will be giving out to you.
The bubble butts all in now, James. Yeah, yeah. Happy, yeah. Slagging them. But no, it seemed to be a developing thing with decent glutes, so it was definitely about the speed there, Willie. Plus, see, long distance running and that bores me. Anything like that, like since the injury there, Rory Kavanagh lent me a racer and I'm down the road and one go at it, and I was like, this isn't for me. Yeah. But then I got a mountain bike. And there's a mountain bike trail beside us here. So I like that bit of rough and up and around and something fast and sharp. Anything long distance, it just bores me, you know. So I sprinting all the way.
a little bit of speed. I'm just thinking back, like, I mean, was Mannion and McCaffrey in there when you were there? They would have been in 13. Like, I mean, are they must be winning the sprints, two of them.
Yeah, so like in terms of the sprints, definitely. In terms of probably the longer runs, yeah, Jack was decent, but those lads, when you look at the physiological makeup of the sprinters and the Jamaicans, they're full of fast twitch fibres, which are quite anaerobic, and they tire far quicker than the slower twitch, which is what a lot of the Kenyans have. And that, you know, they're able to pound off the ground for hours and hours at the one pace. Gaelic football is obviously somewhat of a mixture in between, but it's more obviously high intense running. But I say the big thing that we would have noticed coming in was the use of GPS systems and getting some baseline data where you're wearing the GPS system within a game and you can actually measure and create benchmarks of how much high intensity running you do in a game. So if the middle eight are covering 11, 12 kilometres, of that 11, 12 kilometres over 70 minutes, anywhere from maybe 2 to 3 3Ks is high intensity. What's high intensity? It's probably 75-80% of your max speed. So then you actually tailor your training to kind of match that. So when I started with Dublin, there was a load of these long runs, and yourselves, you always have a couple of years on me. When you were playing, there was an awful lot of like hard slog, like 400 metre runs and 300 metre runs. But it just, the whole thing has changed really. Like you do need a base aerobic fitness in terms of to be able to endure the load. But ultimately, the game we're playing is about sprint repeatability, if that's even a word. I don't know what it is, but you get where I'm coming from.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, I mean, I missed out on all this technical stuff, Brendan. So did you, with the GPSs and everything. I find it fairly interesting. Back in my day, it was laps. And then when the ground got a bit harder and the clock went back, then you'd play matches and do sprints, shuttle sprints, in, out, over and across the field. And you'd give up completely on the long distance running. And that's what got you fit. So it's a little bit interesting to hear that, Brendan.
I would hate to have the GPS on me at that stage. I was always trying to stay close to goals because I thought, if I make a run and I'm on the 15 or 14 or wherever and I end up out in the 30, 35, I want to turn and shoot or burn my man and shoot. So the further I got out, the more I thought, right, I'm too far from the goals. All was in my head was score, 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 score. So, yeah, the GPS mightn't have been pretty. But I always remember you, Willie, telling me years about Mickle, about just had some big field there in Leith, some big park, and it was like run over that tree, you'd go back and then run twice around that one. I remember you were absolutely dying after. So well, he did. That would have been the old school that he had, you know.
Yeah, he did at that time. That was like he'd send you for 5 laps and then he'd mix you up and send you for 7. And then he'd come back, see you tired, and he'd said, look, lads, we'll change it up. And he'd send you back to do the same thing the other way around. Yeah, and that's how he would mix it up. But in between each one, he'd be telling us that, you know, Jesus, you're some footballers. Like Jack O'Shea, he'd tell us a Jack O'Shea story. Yeah. And you're as good as him. And you're as good, you know. And suddenly you're going back for this next 7 laps and you're full of energy. Come here, Jim McGuinness. James McCarthy was also responding to Jim McGuinness. And Jim McGuinness was talking. Now, this was at the Sky Media Day that he spoke about this. Apparently, he was on talking with Joe Molloy as well. I think he backtracked on this a little bit. Brendan, I'm going to throw this to you first. But he said, Dublin were probably the most defensive team in the country last year. There's absolutely no doubt about that. They had 15 men inside their own 65 every time the opposition had the ball. The difference is that when Dublin get the ball, they're absolutely brilliant. They're brilliant at keeping the ball. They're brilliant at running the ball. They're brilliant at transitioning. They're brilliant at kicking their scores. Like, I just fundamentally disagree with that Dublin have 15 men inside their own 65 almost every time the opposition had the ball. It's just not true. That's not what Dublin want to do. And there's loads of times in games that Dublin will have them back. But if you take a screenshot of that, they're paired off with a man. Like, teams often attack with everyone now, Brendan. So there's always a case, even if they're playing Mayo or Kerry, you know, you will find situations on both sides of the field where the attack is a bit slow, cornerbacks join in. You know, now you find yourself up past midfield with everyone on the Kerry or Mayo team in that half and Dublin marking their men. Like, you cannot possibly say that's a defensive team. Like, what are they meant to do? Just let these players off.
Right. I think, well, this comes back to the whole blame game, you know. The Ulster boys are blamed for years, and rightly so, for creating the worst, you know, effects of blanket defence and rigid defending. And then, of course, that had a knock-on effect to everybody. Particularly, obviously, if you look at 2014, when Dublin decided we're going to play our own game, and they got sucked into Donegal's counter-attack. And once that happens, there's going to only be one winner, as I told you in News Talk before that game, and you completely disagreed with me, but we'll park that. But at that time, Willie, then, when Dublin learned to do with that, then I think everybody then is trying to fire out who's doing what and this blanket defence. I think the game's moved on. That's why I was very surprised by Jim's comments now. I mean, if this was a few years ago, this was being thrown out by everybody. Dublin are just playing the game as they have to see it, in terms of you've got to protect your defence if the other opposition's doing it, and then you've got to hit them on the counter. And if you've got better players, the better players will still come out. And this is the thing about any system. Once they mirror each other, the better players come out, and that's what Dublin learned to do. So if teams were going to sit and they were going to sit, then that's it. Who's quicker to break? Who's got the better people at kicking points and that? So I was surprised at that. I was wondering then, was it, you know, it's a bit like Brawley there at times, throws out the line. I mean, look at the traction that comes off the back of that. It creates a whole lot of debate, but maybe maybe somebody in Sky said, Jim, you need to come out with a bold one here. I don't know. I think anybody who follows sport realises that you know, Dublin, I don't think in terms of criticising Dublin in any way tactically what they do. They're playing the game, obviously, pretty much the bloody perfection, let's be honest. So anybody saying that they're the most defensive team, there's just no grounds for that.
No, because it's out. But what I find it outrageous that if they're playing Mayo or Kerry, you will see that happen, but not very often. Whereas if they were to play Tyrone or Monaghan, you know, for the last 4 or 5 years, you'll see it happening a lot more. Yeah. So, like, I mean, the reality is, Dublin prefer a kicking game and leaving their forwards up there. Sometimes that's not possible. But, like, he's describing Dublin as predominantly drop players back and counter-attack. That is the opposite of what Dublin are. They're not that. They will do that if they have to do it. And I think in a weird way, McGuinness, because he referred to it later on in the piece, he started comparing them to his Donegal team in 2012. Now you start seeing the motivation of what he's talking about now. So now his All-Ireland winning team are like the best team that's ever played the game, right? Do you get me, Jar? Am I onto something here?
No, you're onto something. And Brendan is obviously a fellow county man, so, and he's hit the nail on the head as well. And the first thing in terms of how Dublin are playing, they are playing as you see it, like Brendan said. And again, there's numerous examples from the last couple of years of Paul Mannion tracking back and turning the ball over in the full back line. And the Morden Conn, because that's just what needs to be done if a corner back is going for it on the attack. He needs to be tracked, and it is as simple as that. I think the preferred option for Dublin is to keep guys up there and obviously let it in with the boot. But again, if it's not on, they have to play it as you see it. And if you can force a turnover in the middle of the field and create a counter attack, well, that's just what they'll do. Again, fully agree with Brendan. They're playing the game to perfection, really, in many ways. And it's for an opposition to beat them playing in a similar way with similar quality players. Or you come up with something new and radical and a version of what Jim McGuinness did do in 2012 to park the bus, but be better at parking it and being able to break away. I know Tyrone, it was 2015 or 16 All-Ireland final, whatever one it was, Tyrone tried that when they left the young lad Mark something or other, Mark Bradley up there in his own, and they tried to break out. The second thing, and Jim's comments, and I remember doing a gig with Benny Tierney, was he the keeper for Armagh?
Yeah.
And then reading Usher McConville's book only just over this Christmas that he wrote in maybe 2007, but the frustration that Tierney had, and McConville talks about in his book, that the only one won. Now, they obviously got close the following year, but Tierney was saying to me with a few beers, he was like, you know, we're still pissed off because we're the team that won one in a row, and that said to them, and they were so close to winning another one. And if they had won another one, they could have got another 3 or 4 before that team began to really fall away, and that's how close things were obviously back then, you know. But so Jim, I don't know, or maybe he's trying to get his name out there going for the Dundalk job. Is he still in the running for that? Or
I think he's in conversations.
He's in conversation with the soccer, so you wouldn't know what the agenda is there. But yeah, makes for interesting talking.
It does. Listen, it gives us something to talk about on the show. Like, yeah. I mean, it's nothing personal against Jim. It's just like, I mean, just do not agree with that. And it is usually Ulster pundits that say Dublin are really defensive, Brendan. It's that chip on the shoulder. Oh, we're not the only ones at it. Look, the best team in the country's at it as well.
You're still sick from McGuinness laughing you after that big Romney and McDermott. But hey, well, you know, that's what I was saying. There is a lot of blame that's thrown out about who's doing what. And once anybody in the north sees a team playing defensive, because there's been so much flack thrown up and down, it's funny. It's kind of funny that it is just Ulster. It seems to be Ulster and then everywhere else. I guess that's part of being living in Ulster, and particularly the Occupied Six. You're always ready for a fight. That's probably the way you were just brought up, you know.
But see, even, again, the role I have at the moment, I get to see some of these school games, the Macquarie Cup and that when it's on, and like some wonderful footballers. And, you know, lads aren't going out a big break in school saying, right, let's set up a mass defence here, lads, see how many tackles and turnovers we get over. They're going out to, you know, put the ball over from the outside of the boot, from the angle, and express themselves. And obviously a senior club and county level it's more tactical than that, but that's the essence of why people are attracted to Gaelic football and hurling is the skill element of it. And And that's something which thankfully we are seeing more of up in Ulster as well, in the little mini Ulster league slash championship that we've seen the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, exactly. So James McCarthy's been talking about all Ireland contenders as well, and sure, James is nearly playing everybody a compliment. He's talking about Kerry, and he says they're definitely going to be, they're going to be tight, and you also have your Tyrones, Donegals, Armaghs, Galways, Mayos, the usual teams. They're always there and thereabouts and very dangerous on their day. Like, I mean, the reality here, Brendan, is only Kerry can beat Dublin in Croke Park, am I right?
So you're the closest I would imagine, Mully, all right. You know, I think James always seems to have a bit of a smile on his face. He seems a nice guy, very chilled. You know, you would know, Chair, obviously. But
he likes a pint to Guinness, Brendan, you know? I like a man who likes a pint of Guinness.
He doesn't need to throw out any daggers. There's no psychological warfare coming from him now, as if they say, the only team we're interested in, it's Tyrone. You know, there's none of this freaking nonsense coming out, you know. I think, Willie, listen, looking at Kerry, you're right. I mean, they picked up where they were last year. They're obviously were league champions and deserve it so. They're playing the same, better, I think, this season. Mm-hmm. Obviously, whatever happened last season, we can write that off. But if anybody's coming with ammunition, it's them. You know, the rest of the teams, well, I don't know. I had this feeling there, you know, the way they threw Galway and the Leinster. Could we throw Dublin and the Ulster for a few years just to see what the crack would be? You know, I think they could silence all the Ulster people. Said, come on, the Ulster, try the Ulster Championship. I just wonder, you know, would there be some grounds for when it gets to Croke Park? I just think at that stage, you know, I often think that there's certain teams maybe, you know, obviously we're looking for the likes of Meath and Kildare to get stronger, but there seems to be any given day in Ulster on certain grounds that teams can be taken. Mm-hmm. And I just think when you get to Croker now, particularly with the Dubs, I think Kerry, is the one team we're probably looking at that you would think can match them in all departments.
Yeah, they seem to be the one. Here's one I'm going to throw to you, Gerard. Tomás O'Shea's column, I think it was last Saturday, I just read it today. He was talking about his defending and how he wasn't great at defending as a wing back, and I can relate to that because I was the same when I played wing back, nowhere near Tomás O'Shea's level obviously, but like, I mean, he said I couldn't believe this. He said, I blossomed as a defender under Jack O'Connor because the one thing he identified was that I wasn't a man marker. Actually, I hated space. If I ever felt I was being exposed to it, I'd have no qualms about lying to Thomas Sullivan, Mike McCarthy or my brother Mark that Jack had sent in instructions for us to switch men. Like, I can't get my head around that. I'm cheeky and all as I am, I've never done anything like that. Like, I'm thinking in the championship game, Tomás is going to bullshit his brother to switch men because he's not enjoying Mark and this lad.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing to hear, and maybe only Kerry man of Thomas's calibre could probably pull something like that off, but it's something I probably haven't experienced as a player when you're
unheard tell of, really, isn't it?
No, it's unheard of. You know, but I think he's doing himself a disservice. I think he's an extremely decent man marker as well. In fairness to him, you know, but the game has evolved like so much. I think even when Tomás started to when he finished his career, where we talk about matchups now as well. Like in every back six, there's probably, you know, anywhere from two to three man markers being put on key forwards and just nearly follow them wherever they need to be followed, and other lads maybe holding the fourth structurally a bit. Whereas when Tomás was playing, and even myself in the early years, was you were trying to hold your back six in some sort of shape, and if the opposition forwards were trying to move you around, you could be communicating to pass the lads on and don't be getting pulled and dragged all over the place. But the game has moved from there, you know.
Yeah, no, definitely. You were a motley crew up in your up in Donegal in the 90s, Davy. Was there ever even any of this going on? Tomás O'Shea's winning all Ireland's lying to his teammates to change men. Where do we all go wrong?
We never bothered marking anybody. It was just kind of, we just wanted to do our own thing. But I actually remember when it was my first club final, I remember we played two inside and I had 15 in my back. But I remember the fullback was an old guy. And I was only 19 then. But even in my mind then, I thought I could burn this boy very easily. And I said to the other guy who was back from America and he was an experienced player, I said, go you in the corner, I'm going full forward. I remember actually doing that. That was my first county final. Yeah. I did burn him as well. So, but that was a cheeky one. I enjoyed that.
Jeez, I remember I was over in America one year, and it was my first game. It was about 30 degrees heat. It was really hot, and you know, as you go out, it was playing wing back, And to the other wing back then, you know, you go out and you're kind of polite. Which side do you want? Which side do you want in your ball? Yeah. So I scanned the two wing forwards, and one was Lee O'Brien, who played senior for Wexford at the time. And the other fellow was this owl lad. Right. So I said to your man, go over there. He didn't know who Lee O'Brien was. And I go over and onto the owl lad. And geez, he 3 points kicked off me in the first five minutes. It was feckin' Gary Mason who won in All-Ireland with Down. I was absolutely livid. I said, what a stupid decision. But yeah, never judge a book by its cover, boys. That's basically when you're trying to pick who to mark. Here, before we get into the matches here, lads, I want to wish happy birthday to Mick O'Dwyer. Mick O'Dwyer is 85 today. A hardy bit of stuff, lads, to make it to 85. We know his record in the game. Sometimes I regret kind of my introduction to media was kind of calling Micko a bluffer. And like, I mean, I didn't mind sticking one to Micko, but it was said in a joking manner, but it's kind of stuck with me. I had a very good and a very bad relationship with Micko, and obviously we all appreciate what he did in Leash. So happy birthday, Micko, and I'll see you soon.
Mate, Molly, just for you to go off Micko there, I mean, listen, legend of a guy. See when you meet boys like Micko, it's kind of like when you meet the Omar Hardeen guys, I guess it's a wee bit surreal because you've seen them for so long and you've heard them speaking that when you're actually talking to them, you know, I find those moments very special. I know you maybe didn't initially and you've softened up a bit now, but the story you told me about you and Ross Munley was like his wee favourite player kind of thing in the forward line. And I remember you had played well in the game and he never really took, you were like a workhorse, you were like a target man. And whatever happened in this game, you must have set Ross up for a few scores in the first half. And he says, you never get a better introduction at halftime. Micko was like, that's it, Colm. That's what I want from you. And he was like, I was just getting the ball, give it to Ross. That's all he wants from me. I mean, you were so disappointed because you had moved inside. You thought, I'm going to be the new full forward at least, but really you were just an offloader for Bunley, let's be honest.
Yeah, I was just an old dog in there passing it off to the scorers. Anyways, I got used to it in the end. Right, we'll come back and we'll look at the matches, lads. All right, the first match I want to look at this weekend, lads, is Donegal and Dublin. This is on TG Cahir, 7:15 on Saturday night. It's in Kingspan, Breffni Park. It's halfway. And, like, I mean, I think this is a huge... I'll throw this to you first, Brennan, because I think this is a huge game for Donegal. Like, I mean, would Donegal love a win, a big win here 2 weeks before the championship? Do they need a statement win? Do you know, like, I mean, will Donegal come down here and go, this is a great opportunity for us, stop the shadow boxing, pick a very strong team and, you know, lay down a bit of a marker with Dublin?
I don't know why. I'd love to think it would go that far. I still think we can get a good game of football, but I really think it's about a performance that's pressure-free. Not that worried about the result. They would like to win the game, but not really. It comes down to the individuals. How lads are going to give them a chance? He's definitely not going to play his strongest team, Colm. That's for sure. You know, it will be up there, but there's loads of lads that will be given an opportunity. Injury-free coming through this game is probably one of the highest agendas for Declan Bunner, so kind of getting nostalgic.
But at what point is everything fine tuned and you get your very, you know, your last good performance where everything's working? Because do I look at it, Donegal, Declan Bunner's talking, you know, during the week, he's saying, I don't think we'll be as offensive. I think teams have probably experimented with that attacking option. Will it be defensive? I don't think it will. The top teams will start concentrating on getting their attacking element right. Donegal looked to me to 2 weeks before a Down match to still be in a bloody work in progress. When are they going to decide on what their first team is and what their style of play is? It's a bit close.
Well, if you look at the last three league games, you see they've been so up and down. You know, against Tyrone, very controlled performance. Michael Murphy plays. And then when he gets injured against Monaghan, since then, Donegal have mixed the brilliant with the terrible. And I think that's what Declan Bunner's looking to get in. He needs to get some defensive shape in his play. You know, 5-1 down at the water break to Armagh. You think the hammer and Donegal gave Armagh last year. Armagh had Donegal completely boxed in and they had a perfect counter-attacking system. Now, in fairness to Bunner and Rashford and Paul McGonigal at the water break, we talked about the water break there, we were chatting about it off air there, that they righted that. But that's all a learning process. So I just think as the game's evolving, really, and the injuries that Donegal have had, it's causing them to be up and down so much in games. I suppose that consistency is not going to work in the championship. So I think this game is what they'll be looking for defensively, to get a rear guard action that they can prevent the Dubs breaking through. And listen, that's the hardest thing in football at the minute. So I think that's what Bunner's number one thing will be going into this game at the weekend. And given the likes of, you know, Conor Donald, come on, kicked a couple of points the last day, and lads like Keelan Ward and McFadden Ferry's back, might give him a run, and Paddy McGrath's close to fitness, Neil McGee's back from injury. So all these lads, I think, will use this as a very much a workout game. Now, don't get me wrong, Mike, Donegal would love to win this, and then, you know, there's no league final after. They don't have anything to worry about in terms of that. So, I mean, but it is Dublin, and Dublin do like the challenge of coming out of Croke Park. And Comedy Breffni, they've beat Donegal in the last two games there, the under-21s, a semi-final and a final. So Donegal don't have happy memories of playing the Dubs recently there.
No, like, I mean, but here's the thing with Donegal. So obviously they played against Monaghan very, very offensively, and they conceded some goals. Now, they didn't have their full team. McManaman, who's their best man marker, wasn't playing. Paddy McGrath, who they maybe be their two corner back men. Neil McGee got caught once, tries. Would they not try to continue that with, you know, their main men, rather than go, right, that didn't win with, you know, some of our second choice teams, and now we're going to try, you know, maybe a bit more defensive. Like, what's your philosophy for this year? Like, I mean, it shouldn't depend on one game. If you say, right, well, this is what we're going to try and do this year. Oh, shit, now Monaghan scored four goals. Do you start scratching your head, or do you say, hang on a second, let's tell the lads, these are the mistakes that you made in that game. Let's work on them in training, and let's go out again the next day and let's try that again.
Yeah, go on, Brendan. Yeah,
sorry, Jerry.
I'm just going to say. Well, see the analyse done at the minute. I'm scratching my head. I've never seen anything like that Monaghan game. And then in Armagh, we were totally played off the pitch a few times. And then from the death, 65 minutes, they get the goal, 4 points up in a lower scoring game. Well, that was Armagh's game won. Somehow we should have won the match at the end. So I just don't know what Donegal, you're trying to say what their style is. It seems to change every 10 minutes. Well, like, I'm sitting going, like, doing commentary in them games, your voice is nearly gone at the end. There's so much going on. But going in to play Dublin, I think, obviously changes everything, because they obviously are setting the bar so high. So I think if Donegal are going to think that we can win Ulster and go in and have a tilted All-Ireland, it has to start at the back first, and that's where we've been weakest. So I think that's where you're thinking Donegal are probably concentrating more on getting defensive shape against the Dubs. And if we can come out of that game with a bit of a surety in our defence, we all know about our forward line and our attacking ability, so that's where it has to start.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Like, I suppose I hope defensive shape and stuff, we know that bringing some bodies back doesn't work against Dublin, because Dublin turn into a very boring team and never give you a sniff at it. So I thought the first round of the league game, the Monaghan, Tyrone, Donegal were all changing their style with a view of being able to take on Dublin down the line. So we'll be interested to see how Donegal, you know, set up against Dublin. Jared. No,
yeah, absolutely, Willie. And again, for me, I think one of the challenges that Donegal have is probably one, deciding on how is it that they want to play and just going and doing it. If you overcomplicate it, you know, of course, at inter-county level, you have a plan A and certainly a plan B, and to a point, a couple of tweaks that could look like a plan C, offensively and defensively. But if you're interchanging between the whole lot of them, unfortunately, players in the heat of battle, when you become fatigued, your concentration levels dip and you switch off. So I think they probably need to decide on what their plan A is, and also with all their fit players available, what is their starting 15, and try to get that right as close to the championship as possible. The other challenge for me, for Donegal, from the outside looking in, obviously Brendan has his ear to the ground there, being from up that neck of the woods, but psychologically last year they took their eye off the ball in the Ulster Championship. The talk was, here's a Donegal team that's going well, that's going to push Dublin in the All-Ireland semi-final. And the real chance here, and they just took their eye off the ball, and then they got caught in the hop. Again, this is just my philosophy of football, and looking at the attributes of the Donegal players physically, technically, the Donegal players are as good as any other county out there. Giving them the scope and the opportunity to go and express themselves. And we also have to bear in mind that it's Bonners and Rochford. I think it's their fourth season, albeit it was a short season last year and obviously this year too, but it is technically a fourth season. What is it you're trying to achieve? Albeit you have to tweak and move things around every so often, but they obviously know what they're doing. they're keeping their cards close to their chest. But I think Donegal have wonderful athletic footballers, and they've a bit of hardness, certainly when Neil McGee's back there. And O'Neill, I'm 35, 36 this year, he's no spring chicken either, but he does look in good shape. I think he gets caught when he is being dragged out the pitch and he's getting turned, and maybe the defensive structure that was there before obviously suited him, and he could control things. That's not saying that he's not an excellent tackler either, but you know, age is your age, and you lose your bit of sharpness as you progress. But they probably just need to decide what it is they're trying to do, how they're trying to play, and just let the lads go and play. And again, I'm obviously a Dub, so my blue tinted glass on here, we know how Dublin are going to play, and they just go out and play it, and they try to beat you playing their system, and they can adapt and evolve with what they're seeing in front of them. In the same way, the more practice that Donegal get playing their best way of football, best type of football, and for me would be, you know, moving the ball quick, hard runners, athletic runners, get the ball inside, let the lads take on the Dublin defenders or whoever it is they're playing against. And the third thing, I know I've waffled on a bit here, is the confidence that you get from beating the All-Ireland champions in the league. You know, that's huge. And again, I've said it numerous times, we obviously won 2011, and people are saying we'll never stop talking about that. But in 2010, we beat Kerry in Fitzgerald Stadium in the league for the first time in 20-odd years. And the team that won Fitzgerald Stadium 2010, it wasn't necessarily all the same personnel for Dublin or Kerry, but the confidence was there. And when it came to a close encounter in the All-Ireland final 1 year later, we got over the line, yeah, and the rest is history. There's a lot of things in there.
That's kind of why I was thinking maybe laying down a marker might not be a bad thing for Donegal, and treating this like a big game, Brendan, because there's obviously 2 weeks. And one thing Donegal have, if they want to go out and try and attack Dublin, is they probably have McManaman who could follow Kilkenny, and they have Neil McGee who have the strength for Conn, which Kerry don't have, for example. And they seem to have two good matchups. Maybe McFadden Ferry might be good to follow Kilkenny, maybe not when Kilkenny goes inside. McManaman could pick him up there, but McFadden Ferry is a bit of a dog, Brendan, you know, to hang out with a lad out around the half back line for a full game. They have a few good matchups from Dublin, you know, like, I mean, you can make the case for seeing how Donegal can hurt Dublin if they want to go out and play them.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, Costlow, Pasquale, I mean, once you start to name Dublin, you basically name the whole team and their subs. There's probably certain people in there. Keelan McGonigal's actually really starting to come of age in that field. And that's what I mean. Well, I see the personal battles coming out of that. Those lads that you mentioned, if they can match up these guys, it's going to bring them on the way. And the likes of Keelan, like maybe Mark and Fenton, you know, we've seen some brilliance from Michael Langan. The other big midfielder, Jason McGee, came on the last day too. So I think that it's all about those players. And as Jared was saying, because it's such a benchmark, that if Donegal hold their own in this game and come out of it unscathed, I think that's everything Bonner wants. But should there be an opportunity, you know, with 10 or 15 to go, that Donegal are in the mix, they're going to push all guns blazing. So I still think it could be an interesting game, Wally, but you're always thinking that bit of extra, I suppose, time that Dublin has in terms of going into Leinster and that means that they can afford to throw on their best players and really exercise their squad, where I don't think if anybody has any issues at the minute, they won't play. And I think that will probably weaken Donegal that small bit.
Yeah, maybe that's it. The other interesting game of the weekend, lads, is Monaghan and Galway. Two managers under pressure here, if we're being honest, because two managers who took over last year didn't win a championship game, knocked out by hated rivals. Monaghan by Cavan and Galway by Mayo in their only championship game, come back this year then and now are in a relegation. Jesus, you know, like, I mean, and to be honest, it's not all doom and gloom. Like Monaghan, I would look at Monaghan and be pretty enthusiastic about them based off the league, but the reality is if they lose against Galway, it's not been a good start, and there'll be a lot of pressure on Banty, and Galway I think even a bit more so.
Yeah, and looking at Galway's situation, poor Joyce, obviously the wonderful start in the National League last year. COVID definitely wasn't good to his team, and he's probably been struggling to regain that level of fluency certainly in their attack play. You know, after the hiding against Kerry, they got their act together, Roscommon the next day, and for large parts of the game against Dublin, they performed quite well, and a bit of experience and probably quality got Dublin over the line. down in Tuam, but he'd be happy with aspects of it. And I think if he can take the good from the Dublin game and the bit of resilience he showed in the Roscommon game and lay that on the field then against Monaghan, they're in with a good shout.
Would you worry a little bit about Galway in that they had the decent performance against Dublin, playing a style that Pádraig Joyce came in and said he didn't want to play it? Do you get me? Like, what are Galway now?
And Kevin Walsh, obviously, in his own bit of punditry, came out and was speaking about the reasons why he had to, go away from that attacking type of football that people would associate with Galway, and he had to play ultra defensive despite maybe how he would like to see the game being played. But these are the cards he had, and here's how he had to play
them. Who do you blame for that, Chair? You have to blame us. You see, it all comes back to the Ulster.
I blame our man in 2002. they started all that.
I'm telling you, when you look back on those, Armagh played a fantastic style of football, and so did Tyrone in 05. Yeah. And they were told back in those days, they're seeing these are defensive. I look at those games, I looked at them all back during the first lockdown. They played fantastic football.
Ronan Clark, obviously, Armagh full forward, and I was in the minor final 2003, and I was there, Armagh Tyrone playing again, Drew Leash. But Ronan Clark was playing for forward.
Beachy in the replay. Beachy
in the replay. I actually forgot that, But playing a college's game against St Mary's Belfast, and we were playing up in Dundalk, and Ronan Clark was playing for St Mary's. I think he scored about 18-19 points, and Sean Collar from Port Leash was marking him, who, I think he got one diving block in. That was the talk on the bus on the way back with a few beers, that was a great block cuts, but pretty much the other 19 points. But the crossfield ball that Armagh played into to him was a super type of football.
But that was it. But trying to pick up on what point we're talking about. Oh yeah, Galway, Brendan. If you come in, I don't want to be hard on Pádraig Joyce. I'm an ex-teammate of his in Tralee, and I really like Pádraig. But I would be a little bit concerned about him at the moment, they came out playing this great football, and it was great combination play. Comer centre-forward, Walsh in the full forward line, lovely diagonal ball to Walsh, layoffs, combination play. You can see that this was good football. The lockdown happened, they got hammered by Mayo, and they got a fright. And then they went out to Mayo in the Connacht final and played a sweeper. Then they went and played Kerry this year, took an awful beating, and now they're coming back nearly playing a double sweeper against Dublin last weekend. So, does Pádraig Joyce have an identity crisis to deal with here?
Yeah, definitely, William. I think you've seen the huge issues in Galway with the change in style and the abuse and some of the stuff went on there. Walsh tried to change that. Looking back at it now, Walsh did a good job in terms of... But before he came in, just as you said, Mayo were just hammering Galway every year. He made Galway competitive. He turned that round. I suppose that's what he left with us. So, listen, this is Pádraig's first, major job coming in. And again, well, just going back to what you're saying about Donegal, the short time frame now in the way every match is like, what happened there? Crisis. This is a crisis. When Galway lost to Kerry, you were kind of like, forget about it. It was one game, and it is that Kerry forward line. And they were coming back late, and et cetera. So it's hard to be too down them. You would just think playing Monaghan now that, Tony Buckley's in the background. I'm hearing word coming out from Monaghan. They're having great respect for him. He's beginning to filter through his putting his stamp on that team. They have a sprinkle of young players coming through there. Boyd, Bannigan, Lavelle, Mulligan. They all look like they're players who can cause problems. So you just think tactically with Monaghan, versus Galway now, that the Bandy haven't been there before and round the house a bit, that matching up to Joyce now, that might just give Monaghan the edge going into this tie. Just going back to something else, the big Began, I'm just watching him a few times. Well, he's such an intelligent goalkeeper. You talk about all the rules that keepers provide now. The game has changed so much, but against Donegal, when they lost a man at the black card and then a red card, the way he comes out to pitch in that, He's such a dangerous player in that and everything else that he does. And he's another player, obviously, the likes of Galway don't have on their side.
Yeah, and even off the bench, Darren Hughes obviously isn't playing as a sweeper anymore. Donny Buckley doesn't believe in sweepers. He doesn't like that. So he's playing as an orthodox midfielder. Look at their bench the last day. Desi Ward came on, Kieran Hughes came on, Niall Cairns came on, and Jack McCarron came on. Now, that's with these young lads now filtering into the first team. Now, some of those lads will start the next... But the one thing Donny Buckley works on is one-to-one man-on-man defending. And that's what his specialty is, right? So he obviously have an influence over the game plan and more of an attacking game plan. But he doesn't believe in extra defenders. He believes in fronting up. And that's what Mayo always did. That's what Kerry did against Dublin in 2019. Tadhg Morley, you had Jason Foley and you had Tom Sullivan. Manning up against that incredible Dublin full forward line. And look, I'm going to try and front you up hands on. I don't think there's enough coaching with that, Gerry, anymore. I see, you know, Donegal getting a fright against Monaghan and now going, whoa, Jesus, this looks a bit scary. Hang on, coach them into doing it. I know they've been rewired with the Jim McGuinness tactics for almost 10 years. But geez, these lads are inter-county footballers. And like, I mean, if I can learn how to tackle when I'm feckin' 16, 17, I'm sure they can. But, you know, work on it. Talk to them. You know, get goal side of your man. The minute he plays the ball, get a good hard tackle in on him. You know, don't be watching his feet. Watch the ball all the time. All these little things that, you know, or don't be watching. Yeah, is that, or don't be watching the ball because he'd be moving it. Watch his chest, you know, and keep your eye on that. Like, I don't think these lads are being coached well enough in the backs. Adoni Buckley, for example.
So, yeah. If you break it down, right, you have to get guys fit initially when you get your squad, and then you're, which is probably what Mikko did really, really well, and then you're looking at the technical ability of players in possession, but also they're moving from a defensive point of view. And certainly my observations of being around colleges football and watching games the last number of years is that out and out defenders, their ability to read the play as it's developing, to follow the movement, to maybe do their homework on the opposition forward and how he likes to move and his dummy runs, and being able to counteract that, the quality of man-to-man defending has certainly reduced. From my experience of going from Pat Gilroy to Jim Gavin, more of an emphasis came on to man-to-man defending, which is obviously where the better teams are going now. Donny Buckley's blueprint and which we've seen with Mayo and Kerry to a point, it works. And I've said it before, the bit of quality, it's certainly in Mayo's case in the couple of semi-finals and All-Ireland finals, they just missed out on a bit of quality, or maybe between the years they just switched off and got cut out. So it does work.
One of the features of Mayo in those finals was some of their dispossessions on Dublin forwards. It was absolutely incredible.
Yeah, you know,
in one-on-one situations, it was a feature of all those matches.
Yeah, and you talk about maybe the matchups and Kieran Kilkenny, and I played with Stephen over in Donegal, Boston when I retired. Brendan, Steve McMenamin, lovely guy. If I was Steve, and I'd be, well, I shouldn't be giving this away, but it's not rocket science, but look at how Lee Keegan has marked Kieran over the years, the way he marked Dermot Connolly as well, when the both lads are going well. But Lee's ability to keep Kieran quiet, so what was he doing? And mirroring someone is a form of flattery, and if you can learn from the best and other guys, I think that's what you do. And that's sometimes my advice when I'm talking to younger players as well, is to make sure, get watching as many games as you can, look at the better guys in your position in the field, what are they doing, and try to counteract it. But your game intelligence, going back to Buckley's your comments on Buckley, when you're teaching fellas then to actually mark your man, to mirror the movement, your ability to read the play and to read the game, it just increases, as opposed to, right, the opposition have won the ball back, you two lads sprint back to the edge of the small parallelogram, wherever the hell it is, or the edge of the D, like Galway's double sweeper against Dublin, and you just stay there. There's not a whole lot of skill involved in that for me, but anyway.
Yeah, no, I don't think, like, I mean, some of the best cornerbacks, and we touched on this last week, Brendan, say if you get the ball, right, and you win a ball out ahead, and like, they might even be 2 or 3 yards behind you, but you'll take a step or two to the left, mm-hmm. and then they'll cut across the corner and they'll meet you there, and they could stick you onto the ground, you know, and that's with you having a few yards in them. That's, and then you have other defenders who want to get out in front and fist it away out of your hand and not let you get it in your hands at all. And then, you know, you have other defenders who maybe want to let you off, someone else pick you up, and they'll cover a man inside. And you kind of know these real smart lads, don't you? Mm-hmm. You know the fellas who are clever defenders. I don't want to say too much that they're completely gone out of the game, but you do see with Dublin very, very much able to communicate with each other on the field and go, I don't want him, you pick up him, I'll cover here. You know, and you don't need a sweeper if you have fellas who are really clever like that, you know, and communicating really well. And there should probably be no excuse not being able to communicate really well, that if Ryan McHugh's man drops into midfield, he can't communicate and now he's the sweeper, you know, and now he wins the ball off a break and he's up like his brother Mark and tearing up the field. You know, you can figure this out amongst the six backs, you know, and that was always the way, Brendan. Like, I mean, we've had very bad days at the office with just 6-on-6.
Oh, 100%. I mean, well, if you get your hands on the ball in that tight championship game against some of those top defenders back in the day, that was well done, number one, just to get your hands on the ball. Secondly, and if you were going to try and burn them and get a shot away, you had to be moving at your top speed. And now, if a player, you see it all the time now, if a player's left one-on-one, it's like, how did that happen? The team's defender, like, well, he was isolated. How did that happen? I was thinking back in the day, but that meant just normal game. Now it's kind of like if you look at the forwards around the country, Willie, it used to be a thing where the defenders, there's almost a serious respect. There was, for every 10 top forwards, you would pick 10 top defenders and everybody would know them. And I guarantee you now, if you go to your average GA man and get him the aim, give me your 10 top forwards in Ireland, they rhyme off all the usual suspects. Give me your 10 top defenders. I guarantee you a lot of people struggle even to give you someone that's outstanding. Such has been the change in it, Willie. And it's something, again, if we're looking now, how quick that the game has evolved again. I think now, and you're on about Buckley and one-on-ones, I think that'll come back. But certainly at the minute, I can see very few defenders handling the top forwards in the game one-on-one. Yeah. You know, and you get to places like Croke Park, people are in trouble without the backup.
It's nearly gone like hurling, Gerard. Yeah. The skill levels have gone so high, no one wants to be the dogger. Cornerbacks now want to be foot. They're the new wing backs. Right? And who wants to be just a spoiler? Like, to be honest with you, that's an art in itself. Whoever wanted to be that chip player? Like, they say goalkeepers are mad, but those doggers were mad. Like, what enjoyment was in the game for them? I often scratch my head.
Well, I don't know what it was like, Ben, playing as a full forward. And the odds, no doubt during your career, you were brought out to the 45 or that, or even wing forward, what sort of game it was for you. But for me, as a centre back, and the odd occasion I was put back full back, it was a different sport, and it was something I certainly didn't enjoy. And a couple of times I was back there, Mark and Stephen O'Neill, all I was tasked with doing was just get a fist on it. That's it. That's all you have to do. And for me, it was like, this is boring. I've no interest in this because, you know, there's no skill really involved in it. But you need a type of individual to be able to do that as an out-and-out fullback. I think the real challenge maybe for coaches and teams out there is to teach their forwards how to tackle and how to track back and to work on that so that there's not an overlap created. And if you can stop the defender coming out further up the field, that means as a corner forward, Brendan's not tracking back to the wing back position following his man because he's managed to get a stop on him off there, you know.
Yeah.
See, you've had a very interesting point there, Willie. And this actually could come back to modern day 11 and people's perception of sport. If you look at the game, right, basically everybody gets to play in the game out the pitch except for the two that's left inside. Most teams tend to have two that's staying around the house. So everybody else, you even look at Owen Bann, that's number two for Donegal. He's up the pitch more often than not, having shots, getting involved in the play. So everybody gets to play. So you're right, that lad just has to be the dogger, stick at home. I think maybe the modern players looking going, here, I don't want to do that. Maybe that's why Donegal's clinging on to Neil McGee. Neil's getting like your old hardcore, getting go through a brick wall kind of doing.
Yeah.
He'll play wherever you tell him. But maybe that modern player coming through, well, he doesn't want that now. They want to be out everywhere in the pitch and involved in everything.
Yeah. And you get lads coming to us and in UCD or a couple of other squads I'm involved with, and I really don't like playing cornerback. Can I play wing back? Well, we'll give you a half wing back, but you know what? Unfortunately, you're a better man marker than the fella who we had starting wing back, we put back. So yeah, you're playing.
You're not even that good, you're just better than the other lad.
You're just better than the other lad. And there is an element, and probably when you're designing your team and how you reward players, that well then you probably have to move the goalpost internally to say that, look, we're delighted with fucking Woolley. Super game. Brendan touched the ball twice. He got a score, but didn't touch the ball for the rest of the game. Nor did Woolley. Well done. And that is it. And fellas have to be happy with that. And if they're not, but see, look at the highlights on Sunday game. And again, you talk about society as well. The highlights show the great scores, the great catches. They don't show the off the ball stuff. No. Your man messing around with the full forward, just getting him in headlocks, whatever he has to do, you know, to torment them, because that's not seen as something worth showing.
Well, maybe that's it. And all the young fellas now have social media accounts, and they're on Twitter, and they want to see their score being shown on the, not just on the Sunday game. They want to see something going viral, because they're all obsessed with this on TikTok or Snapchat. Brendan's on Snapchat. Imagine that. He's about 45. I'm way too old for Snapchat, but
he must be chasing it. Yeah.
But anyway, to get my point, Brendan, like, you're not going to see yourself being highlighted on anything being the dogging cornerback.
Yeah, exactly, Willie. And listen, don't always embrace technology. Snapchat's great crack, my man. That's where I could send you a drunk picture or video, and it's never seen again. That's what's safe about Snapchat, my man. But here, listen, Willie. I'll tell you now, Ned, if you look at some of this, and I'm just thinking as we're talking there, do you remember Murphy a few times because of his status in Donegal? Tyrone a few times just put a man on him to literally mark him like a fullback would. He was just in his face. He wasn't even looking at the ball. It was horrible to see, but it was them trying to counteract. So it's, are you willing to sacrifice your game for the team? And because now, years ago, when it was that back six, your full back line was this tight unit, and the three was all together with the keeper and then the half back line. Yeah. They all had their job to do in a certain zone, and there must have been a buzz of collective about that. But if you like now, there's just one maybe or two that's left, and everybody else gets to be up the pitch kicking points, and that's probably where the changes are, yeah.
Yeah, maybe it is. Lads, we'll run through the rest of them here, and we'll just give a prediction on these. We'll go through the semi-finals, lads. I don't have time to go through relegation ones. Division 2 semi-final, Clare versus Mayo, Cusick Park. This is on TG Cahir. Obviously, Clare are having a great league. Let's be honest about it. Probably a step too far to be able to beat Mayo, Brendan, even though, look, they'll give a good account of themselves in Cusick Park, I'm sure.
This worries me, this good account of themselves. Willie, I'm just looking at the divisions, the yo-yo that's going on. We've got yo-yo teams now that are going up and down, up and down. You look at our man, Roscommon, this year. If the league had been normal, they'd probably been candidates for relegation. And if it was, it would have been come back to this situation where the same team's coming up, same team's coming down. And now and then a top team gets squeezed. And if the league has got the seven top teams in the country in it, last year the squeeze came and it was Mayo that went down. So, yeah, listen, Clare having a good league. Mayo are going back up. The other game called there in Meath, very interesting. But again, the top teams, well, you know, that top seven in particular, I think, are just that step ahead. And those other teams are desperately trying to catch up to them. But for me, they're still a good way off.
Yeah, you give Clare a great chance against Kildare Meath in the other semi-finals. Just Mayo are at that top seven level where, you know, Mayo are in the top three, four level. So it's probably a bit too much. Clare often get hammered by Kerry and Killarney, but they often put it up to them in Cusick Park. They're decent.
I'm gonna take a sneaky bet on Clare here. Purely because I agree with everything that both of you have said, but they've home advantage, they're motoring well. I don't know when they've ever been in Division 1 football, if ever. This is their All-Ireland final.
I think in the 90s they were in it.
Okay, this is their All-Ireland final to get up with the group of players they have, to give it their all. At the same time, Mayo will obviously be keen to get back up. It's an outside bet for Clare, but I'm going to chance them.
Right, and that's true because they have Kerry in the championship, so they know this is their game of the season to go up. That's fair enough. So you're going for Clare, myself and Brendan going for Mayo. Kildare Meath in the other Division 2 semi-final. This in Newbridge at 2 o'clock. Obviously, this game last year in Croke Park was a bit of a weird game. Kildare were 6 points up at halftime and conceded 5 goals in the second half to lose to Meath. This is a fight to see who's the second best team in Leinster. Yeah. Neither of them seem to really want to take the mantle on, to be honest with you, and neither of them seem to want to take Dublin on. Ben McCormack's back for Kildare, Mickey Newman's back for Meath. I saw Jack O'Connor complaining, it's in Newbridge, Brendan, I saw Jack O'Connor complaining last week that playing in Newbridge doesn't actually suit Kildare, and traditionally Newbridge really suits Kildare because it is a small tight pitch, and he says that the expansive football they want to play, their own home pitch doesn't really suit them. So I don't know if that's going to be something that will lean you towards me either or not.
No, Willie, I wouldn't say so. And you're right. Listen, the mindset of those teams is all about getting into Division 1. And I think when you're looking at the leagues now, Willie, they've become so split. The fear of a couple of sides going down into three is the real, I think, graveyard area which teams are afraid to go down. And when you're in two, you've got teams like Mayo, coming down from the top flight who have mixed it and played in all Ireland finals. So that gives Division 2 a big lift. There's always a few teams in there that you can really base yourself on. But for Kildare and Meath, both have been up in recent times. They just want to get back into Division 1. It's a massive game for the two of them. And going back to what you're saying at the start of the show, Willie, outside of anything now, this is the year for them. So while the likes of Donegal and Dublin are just thinking Championship, and a lot of sides, Kerry, Tyrone, are just thinking Championship, Kildare and Meath are thinking, we got to stabilise here, get into Division 1, try and stay in Division 1, and only then can they start to get to be in a place where they can have a tilt at Dublin. So vital match between these two teams.
Yeah, who do you both fancy, Brendan, you first?
I'm going to go for Meath.
Yeah, it's a 50-50.
I'm going to go with Meath. I think Jack O'Connor potentially shot himself in the foot with that comment, because Kildare are known to be erratic, perform well one week, perform well in a half and poorly in the next. And Meath is a bit more doggedness, I think, in Meath, which will get them through. And I think when the pressure comes on, Kildare players in the back of their head will have what Jack O'Connor maybe said. Well, you know, sure, this pitch isn't for us anyway.
Well, I do take your point that there's definitely more fight in Meath, and there's more you know what you're going to get from Meath, whereas
exactly.
You don't know what you're going to get from Kildare. So it's a safer, they're definitely a safer bet. Division 3 semi-finals, lads. Limerick against Derry's in Carrick on Shannon. It's in neutral ground at 4 o'clock. It's in GAA Go. Paddy Bradley, it's nearly the same team every time, Ger. He's saying, I've no bones in saying that this is even more important than the Championship. Big focus all year has been getting out of Division 3. So this is like a Championship final to Derry. To get out of Division 3 and get playing at a higher level is obviously going to benefit their development. And he was talking about a conveyor belt of new players coming through from underage, and that the future's bright. You know, they have a very good midfield. You know, McGuigan is one of these, you know, special players. And Gallagher has them kicking a little bit of football. So he was obviously very, very positive about them. But a step in their progression has to be to get into Division 2.
And they have to. And the wonderful performances and the scorelines that they put up in their league campaign to date, if they don't win this game over the weekend, fortunately it'll be forgotten about by the Derry people, because they're still where they were, and progress is only measured by actually for a team like Derry actually getting up.
Yeah.
And fairness to Gallagher, known for being quite probably defensive, he has the lads playing lovely football. I've played against a lot of the Derry players with Vincent, when we played Ballanderry in the semi-final and lost to Slochneil in another semi-final, and they're wonderfully skillful and athletic and tough fellas, you know. So
yeah.
You'd fancy Derry, yeah.
Yeah, you'd have to fancy Derry, even though Limerick are going well. Limerick lost to Offaly, you know, and you know, it's Derry won all their three games. I just think Derry probably could survive in Division 2. Limerick are just up from Division 4. Limerick have a little bit more progression to make. Hugh Burke is playing very well for them in the corner. We know Ian Corbett is brilliant at centre back. I just think Derry are a step ahead of Limerick.
Huge fitness, Willie. They come back, hit the ground running. I know what you're saying there, Ger. I've seen some of the reports in their games. It looks like they train so hard in the lockdown that they've come in with the fitness, that they're breaking into the space. I think they've sucked teams in. They're a good counter-attacking system. It is Gallagher, don't forget. He's not going to abandon that kind of blanket counter-attack defence. But you're right, Glenn and Slochneil players are dominating the side. Two brilliant club teams. And as you said, you know, the likes of McCaig, you know, McFall, McGuigan's brilliant. You know, all these lads in there. Glass is back from the Aussie Rules. Derry are certainly on the up. Still, I think, a long way off an Ulster challenge, but certainly Division 2 would be brilliant for them.
Yeah, definitely, because they play Donegal most likely in the Championship, so that could be their year over. Offaly Fermanagh, it's in O'Connor Park. Big advantage for Offaly. Offaly won all three games. They're absolutely flying it. Like, they're beating Tip, they're beating Limerick, they're beating Wicklow. Like, beating them convincingly enough as well, and playing great football. Like, when you look at Offaly, right, in Mahan's first year, they went up to Navan and should have beaten Meath, playing fantastic kicking football. Then last year they beat Carlow and only lost to Kildare by 4 points. And now they're in the promotion to get into Division 2. Like, I mean, he's done a very good job with a team that didn't look to be going anywhere when he tipped them over.
And Carlow played awfully in the Championship last year, just losing by a point. And
yeah, they only beat 314 to 20 points or something, wasn't it?
Something like that. And awfully played a lovely offensive brand of football. And the few clips I've seen of them in this National League so far, they're playing the same way. And that, in a way, raises the point we spoke about earlier on about either an identity crisis in Galway or Donegal decide in what way do we actually want to play. Mon is playing the way he likes football to be played, and it's as simple as that. It's offensive football. It's very easy to analyse, but it's hard to stop. And if you get guys fit enough, get the quality up, get the morale going, and obviously there seems to be a great bounce in Michael Dignam coming in as chairman, and his leadership and that positivity and no nonsense type approach filters down in many ways, you know. So it'd be great for Offaly, I think, to go up. It'd be great for Leinster to have Offaly up in Division 2 and pushing forward, you know.
So. Yeah. Now, Fermanagh have been in Division 2, so you wonder how good Offaly are. I'd say we're all going for Derry in the last one. I'm going to go for Offaly here at home. Niall McNamee coming in off the bench. They've some good forwards. Keane Farrell came off the bench the first two games. He's a young player. He's highly rated. Then scored 1-3 against Tipperary. You have your usual Anton McNamee and Bernard Allen and these fellas. They have some good forwards, and they get it up early to them, and they play good football. Who do you fancy here, Gerald? Start with you.
I'm going to go with Offaly.
Brendan?
I'm going to have to stick with my neighbours here, Fermanagh.
Okay, fair enough. Division 4 then, this is the big one. It's not the big one, but it's a very big one. Carlow against Louth, like two of at the start of the year, you would probably say the two teams that you'd maybe fancy to go up. You've drawn each other in the semi-final now. Although Antrim have improved a lot, it's still a very, very tough semi-final there.
Yeah, and Brendan, I'm doing a bit of coaching now, just in case. Assuming Leo Carlo, in case you didn't realise, but
I told him.
It's all good.
I'll give you the Mickey Hart playbook now. Yeah, the playbook.
You were worried to say Carlo were playing shite. Yeah,
we're playing shite. Yeah, who's looking after them? Them lads don't know how to tackle. Carlo have home advantage, which is great to be 200 people in there. Loud have played some lovely football. They've got an extra game in, bar losing to Antrim by a point. There's some lovely forwards, and Mulroy is a huge player for them. Everyone goes through him, and you know, we'd be doing our best to try to curb him. But
one thing that I have noticed, when you're looking at Carlo, and obviously I haven't seen Carlo because they don't get airtime in Division 4, but you look like you've settled on a team. You look like you've settled. Some of the criticisms we'd have of the bigger teams, it's not something I can criticise you of. You seem to have settled. Now, I know your pick isn't as big, you know, exactly, but you seem to have settled down on your team and the way you want to play, you know. So you have last year and now another year to kind of build on that again.
Yeah, well, look, the starting points with Division 4 teams is so far different to a Division 1 and 2 team, and just getting guys into good habits around training, being on time, minding themselves the best they can off the field, getting those little things right, they eventually all add up and accumulate and transfer onto the field. And what we have with Carlo, and what I'm very confident of going into the game, is that the lads will give it their all. It's going to be a tight match, two well-matched teams, and hopefully Carlo will come out on top, but it is going to be close.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Waterford Antrim, you have to fancy Antrim here, Ger.
You have to fancy Antrim. Again, Waterford, we bet them well, 15-16 points in the first game. They got their act together a bit more going in against Wexford, they're playing down in I think it's is it Farfield or Wells Park,
it's in Farfield,
so that's Dungarvan. It's actually a lovely pitch.
It's at a quarter past
recently.
12 in the morning for Antrim to have to drive down there, that's harsh.
No doubt they're staying over.
They
stay overnight, and you would have to fancy Antrim in terms of the quality that they have.
Exactly right, lads, we've gone, there was a bit of a marathon show, there was so much to get through, and we didn't even speak about the relegation matches.
You have two quiet fellas here with me and Brendan,
about,
you know.
What about the Division 4 Shield, Sligo and Wexford? You didn't mention that.
Is there a Division 4 Shield? There is.
I don't know.
There is.
Jesus.
We're all GA, we're all one here. Okay?
Listen, I might have played Junior B last night, but I'm not going to talk about a Shield match. Give me a bit of credit. All right, we'll leave it there, lads. We'll be back on Monday and we'll review the whole weekend's football as usual. So we'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
But this little dink ball, the only one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
No, really. Yeah, I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "I Cuffrey, you Free State bastard." And next thing I hear, you have no fucking jurisdiction up here.